The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. It's approaching 8 minutes past 10. Thank you so much to all of you who've texted in and called in. And it has to be said, some of you do call in from time to time on certain issues, frustrated, saying, why don't you say this, or this person's doing that, or that person is doing this, or this person's making money that way, or everyone knows in the area what's going on because I saw it on Facebook and it's in this group. And I said, just to be clear, we can cover stuff, of course. We have to give people a right to reply. We have to chase it up and all that. But we cannot, or any radio station cannot, legally, for fear of incredibly severe sanction financially and otherwise, just throw out what someone's heard or what was posted on a Facebook page or what the whole community know. Or it's just simply not the way it is. We're governed by the exact same rules as RTE, News Talk, Virgin, all of the stations. So I understand sometimes that can be frustrating because you know what's going on and you say, well, why doesn't Greg say what's going on? But there's certain things, and maybe the persons who were in contact will know what I'm talking about. There's certain things you simply cannot say without proof. And an awful lot of proof with some of the stuff that's being said. So just to be clear, because I know it can be frustrating, but it's not about not taking on board what you're saying or not relating. It's simply a case that one cannot, because there are very strict laws in this country in terms of libel, defamation, and so on and so forth. And we have to be incredibly careful. Tell that woman when we went to America, 70 of us didn't land at a house and get everything free. We worked hard. Take a look at all, well, we don't allow people to work, I think was the point she was making, as such, so that that's professor you're talking about there. We were able to go and work, and we were able to go and ply our trade. And a lot of us lived in group housing still to this day. You'll have a team of 15 lads from Donegal down living in one house in Dublin, working in construction or what have you. So we kind of still do that to some extent, but I take your point. But I think her point was that allow people to work. Take a look at all the murders, attacks, rapes around our country. It's not the refugees who are doing it, it's our own people. The counterpoint to that is, but we don't want to make it worse, do we? I do see that on social media from time to time. The majority of people in Ireland believe we have done our bit in the last few years regarding immigration, and we definitely need to start thinking of applying the brakes. Why isn't this problem taken to the people to hold a referendum? Well, the brakes had been put on in Donegal. It's only recently that we've started seeing those brakes eased, and you heard there from Senator Blaney that he is also of the view that enough is enough here. Greg, the airtime given to the protest in Buncrana by a minority of, I can't use the word that they've described them as, who don't want foreigners in, is really something. The footage of these people on Facebook was awful. Some shouting about those dirty bees like something you'd see in Britain when the NF were in full swing. Now, we haven't... what we gave a platform to was people with differing points of view. I don't know what's on Facebook. I didn't see the videos on Facebook. I don't really work with or engage with Facebook in terms of the content of this show. So I don't know what's happened on Facebook. All I know is that we had people on here of different views and had a civilized debate, the same debate that's happening everywhere in houses up and down the country. You know, to pretend it isn't would be wrong. So we have to be able to talk about stuff. I don't see how anyone, there was no racism or anything platformed on this program. We had people with differing views discussing an issue. No one wants these men coming into the community. Women are extremely wary because where these guys come from, women are second-class citizens in some cases. If there's no respect for women, it's time this nonsense all stopped. Now Guido's about to have more men arriving from various parts of the world. Morning, Greg. Buncrana had no issues in taking in Ukraine families, and we welcomed them because they had families. Why should we accept 66 20-year-old men and have them living beside a creche, primary school, secondary school, and a play park? Please stop saying these people are Ukraine. No one has said they're from Ukraine. The distinction has been made quite clearly all week. So I don't know where you're saying that people said they were coming in from Ukraine. It's never meant. Maybe you've seen something somewhere else and are attributing to this program. It wasn't said on this program. Morning, Greg. Stephen Donnelly should be ashamed of himself. He should be made come to Letterkenny and sit in the ED. No questions for a few hours and mingle with the people just to see what happens. That crowd in Dublin don't care and they're getting away with murder. And just to update you on that story, Stephen Donnelly offered to meet GPs next week in Dublin, as was said in the Dáil yesterday, which I was like, what? Why? The Tánaiste said it yesterday, but we know locally that that's not what the GPs want. All via video call with a representation of those GPs. The GPs have written back and said, thank you for your invitation, but with respect, we want you to come and meet us in Donegal and to see firsthand the issues that we're talking about. And that's where it's at now. So we'll see what comes back from the health minister. Re-unvetted refugees. Hamas has just called for a global mobilisation of its support. Be interesting to see who rallies to the call to action here. But just because someone is from a different country and of a different race, it doesn't mean they're going to listen to Hamas calls. I know the quote that you're referencing there as it relates to Hamas, it wasn't quite phrased like that by the leader of Hamas, but thanks for your text nonetheless. There was a stop to bringing in refugees and asylum seekers into Donegal, but that was short-lived. It continues now again. Senator Blaney's very out of touch with what's happening in Donegal. In fairness to the senator again, it was he that referenced that it was put to a stop, and it was he that referenced that we don't have the services for that stop to be taken off, just to be fair to everybody here. Donegal's overflowing, says a listener, and has taken far too many, and now the school's GPs and the ED is paying the price. Nobody wants to admit the truth that mass immigration is fueling the hospital crisis. Why isn't this problem taken to the people to hold a referendum? And again, people who call for a referendum are of the view that it would pass by a majority to stop inward immigration or migration. And obviously, there's potential consequences in terms of our immigration into that, dependent on the country we might be dealing with. But it's not a foregone conclusion. I don't believe it's a foregone conclusion. And it would depend how it's worded. Because, you know, I think people in favour of referendum on immigration would want it worded that, are we full? Is it time? You know what I mean? It wouldn't be worded like that. It would be quite a convoluted message, perhaps. And it passing is not guaranteed either. Bringing compulsory euthanasia. I'm not going to read that. I understand what you're saying. I know you're trying to use strong words, but we're not going to go down that road. Our health service is a disaster when we look at LUH, but not only that, we look at the cost of the Children's Hospital and its opening and data once again pushed back. We would need a person like Sir Gerry Robinson to go in and make radical changes to the whole system. The Children's Hospital, and is this controversial to say, it's funny money really, isn't it? 1 billion, 2 billion, 3 billion, 4 billion. Like, if it's 1 billion, is your life going to get any better if it's 4 billion? And I'm not saying it's not something that someone should be held accountable for, or that it's okay to spend money willy-nilly. That's not what I'm saying. But at the end of the day, I want better outcomes for children. If that's the way to do it, just get it open. Whether it's 1 or 4 billion, to me, someone has to be held responsible if there's money wasted. But I just want it open at this stage. There's a house in our area that usually 4 to 6 people live in. Now it has 33 people in it. Your health and safety is turning a blind eye. The cover-up happening with this government is shocking. No one cares that these men have been left with nothing to do all day and very little facilities in the area to occupy them. Too many of the owners of these houses are being handsomely paid, and many of those landlords are often in positions of power, hence nothing is done. Well, you see, the bottom line is a lot of rules were changed, not just here, right across the country, in terms of health and safety, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. All premises are checked, you know, so they are pass. So just to give you an example of what I was saying earlier on about what we can and can't say. So that listener believes that health and safety is being done away with and is blaming the person or persons or group or whoever it is that owns the property. So they want me to be able to say, well, that person is doing that. But that person would say, well, we had health and safety in, or that group or individual or company would say, we had health and safety in and they said the place is okay. So stating otherwise would be libelous, or, you know, could get you into trouble. And that's where the situation is in this country. Right, okay. Let's, we're joined on the programme now by Majida, who is a resident of the Sailors Rest Refugee Centre in Buncrana and originally from Gaza. Majida, thank you so much for joining us and thanks for being on the programme.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Right. I spoke to you some time ago as the situation worsened in the Middle East. This has had an impact, obviously, on you here, but also your family in Gaza. What have you learned or what do you know?
What I know, like the north of Gaza is totally destroyed. Where is my brother and his family settled there in Beit Hanun? And unfortunately, they destroyed their home. And in the first 3 days of the attack, he lost two children. And in the fifth day, he lost his daughter with all her family. And one day before, after, he lost his wife. And he was in the hospital because he also injured during the attack. And unfortunately, we lost him when they attacked the hospital with more than 500 Palestinian, the highest number. They were children and more than the adults. So it is really heartbroken in the moment because the people who just try to bear every day, the number is going high and high and high. And I don't know why the people, they cannot see that, why they cannot do anything against like the Israeli murders. I don't know why. I don't understand it, to be honest.
Obviously, this escalation has happened over the last couple of weeks, but the situation has been very, very bleak in Gaza for many generations now. What was it like when you lived there? And actually, sorry, my first comments is to offer my condolences on your loss. It's an awful, awful loss of life and family, and I'm so sorry for what you're going through, Megiddo, and I should have said that first. My apologies. But when you were in Gaza, as I say, this is not new. It's a new escalation in what's happening. What was life like?
It was like that, but not that hard. They don't attack the whole city from the north to the south. And in this, like, it is a new agenda. So sometimes they attack when they have, like, any attack from Palestinian, but not that bad. And now the target is like, where is the, I'm sorry, but they attack the hospitals, they attack the schools, when it has become a shelter for the people who lose their houses. They attack us sometimes not without weapon. They just can't cut the electricity, they can't cut the water, they can't just close the border with both sides, inside Palestine with the West Bank or with Egypt. So in that case, we don't have medicine, we don't have like the supplies for the daily life. We don't have them from outside. So but now it is closing border, attacked with the weapons, destroyed in the whole city, the houses, hospital, mosque, everywhere. Even the dead people, when the area they used to bury and they know this area, they attacked it three times. So they attacked even the dead people.
It would be described as the reason some of this is justified is that Israel is committed to eliminate Hamas, and they accuse Hamas of using citizens, regular people, as human shields. But that doesn't tell the story. I mean, I am sure the residents that can't move or aren't moving aren't there at gunpoint at Hamas. Does that actually tell the full story? Like, I presume your family, who very sadly perished, aren't Hamas human shields, are they? They just either couldn't or didn't want to move from that area. Just because this human shield thing is something that kind of annoys me as a description.
Look, let's make the things clear. Hamas, it is only like 15 years when they start call themselves Hamas. But before, like 65 years, they attacked whole Palestine. There is when it, Hamas is not there. So Hamas, it is something new for us, and not everyone he stands behind Hamas. Okay, Hamas, because the people, they fed up. The whole world left us alone. So they have to create people who defined of Palestinian. Okay, we don't understand the whole agenda now. Maybe in the future, something will tell us the whole story.
Well, of course,
until
Hamas
now, no one can understand.
Of course, Hamas doesn't run, doesn't have control in the West Bank, and there's still Palestinians being killed in the West Bank as well. So I accept exactly what you're saying. But I don't want to get into timelines and blame games, but I must ask, when you learned of what Hamas did in Israel 2 weeks ago, what was your reaction? What was your reaction to that?
Look, in the first moment, I was shocked because I didn't expect that. And the first thing I said, what will go on? What is next? This, it will be good for us, or the reaction will be like bad as it is now. So I think now the answer, like, I don't trust both sides because everyone murder and do something to kill others. For me, it is Zionist, and I don't stand with the Zionists, whatever it is called, or their nationality or their ideology. I don't care.
But
the murder
you
is murder, whatever.
You would be, the word condemnation is often overused and people being asked to use it. But just to give us an understanding, as someone from Gaza living here now, I presume you do condemn the actions of Hamas in the last couple of weeks in what they did to the, you know, the women and the children and taking people hostage. Do you condemn that, or do you understand why they did it?
I understand because we have the same issue. But for myself, like, I was in a prison, so I know, I understand why in the Israeli, they have no reason to kidnap anyone. But okay, they have to do something sometimes to tell, okay, we can do what you are doing whole years for us. I understand that. But they don't murder them. They don't kill them. They don't hurt anyone. I'm sorry now, like, I'm not in the point I can explain all this because really I messed up with everything emotionally and...
Mm-hmm. You still have family, a niece and a nephew of the same family that very sadly perished. What part of Gaza are they in now?
And now they are. They came to the really south, in the border with Egypt. Because now they try to find really safe place, but there is no guarantee for any safe place.
Mm-hmm. And of course, there is this ongoing negotiations to try and get just 20 lorries of aid across the Egyptian border into South Gaza. Some estimations that they need 100 times that to make any impact.
What is
the future? What is the future, Megiddo? It's hard to see. I mean, it is possible the Israeli army will go into North Gaza today or tomorrow. They are committed and seem to have the international backing to eliminate Hamas as much as they can. And obviously that's going to lead to a great loss of civilian life. But what's the end game here? If, you know, what is the future?
It is the same ending when they say there is chemical webbing in Iraq. It is the same case when they say there is chemical weapons in Afghanistan. It is the same things. It is only lies and lies and lies. And I think even if they will go to found Hamas, I don't think they will find anyone, because just they want to clean Gaza from their people to make a new place for themselves. And I know they are using lies all the time. And unfortunately, the whole the world, they know that. But I think Israel, they paid for all the governments to be silent and accept the murders. Because if the blood of the children and women and civilian people, they don't make them move to stop this, I don't think if they use Hamas as excuse for killing more people, they will do.
Can Palestinians live side by side in peace with Jewish people, with Israelis?
Listen, we don't have any issue with the Jewish, because the Jewish who believe in Torah, they know they have to live in peace in all the world. But we are against the Zionists. The Zionists, it is our enemy, not the Jewish. Jews as a religion, we are really respected, and we live with them in peace. We don't have any problem. But if the Zionists, look, I am agree if Zionists and Hamas leave Palestine now, I'm sure Palestine will be really in peace.
And just finally, could you estimate, because I had a guest in here and I quoted some figures last week that suggested there's around about 60% support for Hamas in Gaza. And he said, no, it's much more than that. Hamas is highly respected and liked in Gaza, which I was a little bit surprised by, but that's what he said. He said it was misinformation, international misinformation, to suggest otherwise. What level of support do you believe, at least in the Gaza Strip, Hamas has from amongst the general population, honestly? How many, like, can you put a figure on that, roughly?
No, I cannot put a figure, because...
Is it the majority of people support Hamas in Gaza?
It's different between you respect them and support them.
Well...
It is there is misunderstood between respect people who try to help in the social life, and support education, support...
Would the majority of people support respect them then? Is that what you...
Yes, yes. Okay. Respect is a different story when you support people.
Okay. Megida, thank you very much again. Sorry for your loss, and I hope your niece and nephew are safe. Thank you very much indeed. I appreciate your time. That's Megida there, who is a resident in Bonkrana. Okay, what do you think? 086 60 25,000. A caller says it's disgusting. She can't bring herself, even with the death of her own family, to condemn what Hamas did. Another, heartbreaking to think of suffering going on out in Gaza. Israel, absolutely terrible. And it's always the innocent who suffer. No food, water, heat, medicine. It's a disgrace what's allowed to happen. But is it true? The latest news is that the hospital was not bombed, but a car park. That's misinformation to stir up the Muslim population. God help everyone. Well, if whether it was the car park or the hospital displaced people, went to the hospital, and there was 1,000-odd in the car park because they believed if they were close to the hospital, they'd be safe. So whether the hospital itself was struck or the car park was struck, and obviously the Israelis say it wasn't they, whether it does, I'm not really sure what it matters whether the car park or the hospital was struck, because an awful lot of people had gathered around the hospital because they believed it to be safe because their homes were destroyed. And, 500 plus certainly died. There's no dispute on that. So whether they were in the hospital or in the car park, let's say if that was Letterkenny, would that matter? Say, we were all bombed out of our homes and we all decided to stand in front of the car park there at the hospital because we thought, right, well, a hospital is going to be safe from bombing, and a bomb did go off. Does it matter whether we're in it or outside it? I don't understand that. And also, I won't say what I was going to say. Hamas secured 54 of the seats in the 2006 election, but have violently crushed all opposition since then and haven't allowed any election in the past 7 years. Not sure if they represent the majority of Gaza anymore. Well, we heard from a Gazan there in Megida who says that the majority respect them, whilst the majority might not actually support their actions. So I asked that question because I expected others might come in with it. Right, okay. It's terrible, isn't it, what's going on in the world at the moment? I was sitting last night, I was actually lying beside Hudson, putting him to bed last night, and I was thinking, what a world, and not sound depressing or whatever, but what a world in that you've got this situation raging in the Middle East and people arguing. Like, you've got people in this country that have never so much as smelt an explosion or heard a bullet, sort of given their opinion about whether it's Israel's fault or it's Palestine's fault or it's Hamas's fault. Like, and they're brought onto RTE as if their opinion matters. You know, yet there's innocent people on both sides massacred, families wiped out. That's there. And then we see what's happening in Ukraine. You know, hundreds of thousands of young Ukrainians, young Russians massacred. And all for what? You know, it's for what? And it's just, you know, sitting there beside a 2 or 3 year old and you wonder, what will things be like in 5, 10, 15, 20 years' time? The MTV Awards were due to take place in Paris in November next month. They called them off because of the state of, for security reasons. They can't guarantee the safety of such an event in France. I mean, that's where we're at now. Mainland Europe, big events being cancelled because of what's happening in the Middle East. It's, I don't know, the world leaders need to knock their heads together and people need to sort of get behind trying to find a solution to this instead of having no connection with these areas, but trying to advocate on behalf of one side or the other. It's, I don't understand why anyone cares what they think, but anyway. All right, a listener says, good morning, Greg. In our area, we had a peak in robberies and attempted robberies since we had an influx of refugees. So there's one example for you, so much for the Garda slot. Well, I, following on from this, trying to make inquiries in relation to that, and I'll try and bring those to you a little later on in the programme. My understanding, it might be one individual responsible for a couple of them, if that makes sense. Morning, Greg. Could you please remind people to switch on their lights whilst driving around the town today, which I presume is Letterkenny? I drive for work and I notice the amount of people that have no lights on. It's ridiculous. It's just going to cause a crash. Thank you very much indeed. Right, let's stay on the road. Paddy, good morning. Paddy, are you there?
Hello.
You are there. Paddy, good morning. It's Greg here. Right, you are... Tell us, you've been out on the road yesterday. What's your observations?
Sean, I live out there on Milton Road, and I was on the way into the Mount Errigal Hotel yesterday evening, as I do most evenings there, about 4:30. And it took me 35 minutes to get from the Glebe to the Mount Errigal Hotel at 4:30 yesterday afternoon. Now, this is all to do with the lights at the Polestar roundabout. You know, it can't be any other explanation, because I've been doing this trip for 20 years and it never took as long before. It maybe 7 or 8 minutes max, you know. I was on the way to the Mount Errigal for the sauna, as I would do most evenings. And 35 minutes. If I spent as long in the sauna, I would have come out like a lobster. It's just an absolute joke the way these lights are upsetting the whole town.
Hopefully, over the next few days, things will improve. Paddy, are you optimistic?
No, I can't see it at the minute. You know, who's it benefiting here? You know, the traffic seems to be getting worse on this side of the town. Anyway, You know, my advice would be just to let the traffic flow. Like, if you, I would even go as far as turn the lights off, you know, in the evening.
But Paddy, the thing about it is, and I'm guilty of this, so don't think I'm having to go. But you've got your wee routine, and you head into the Errigal there every day, and you know how long it takes you, right? But what about other people? What about other people trying to use the roundabout, and they're stuck because the traffic's not moving? The traffic lights allows all the traffic to move, but it seems that it's impacted on you.
Well, I've yet to speak to somebody who is benefiting, to be honest with you, because, I mean, ways have got worse for us coming in from the Melton side all of a sudden, you know. Like, who's it benefiting? Is it releasing traffic from the town? I don't know.
Right,
have
okay.
you talked to anybody that's benefiting from it? What I would like to see happen is just the lights been turned off in the evening there, and you get the likes of Kieran Brogan and Jerry McMonagall just to marshal it and let the traffic go on through, and Nigel McLennan boys like this, you know.
They might be busy doing other stuff, but I take your point. All right, Paddy, listen, thank you very much indeed. A caller says, I think it's ridiculous that the GPs think the Minister for Health has time to travel to Donegal just to meet them. Surely you can get a feel for the issue via Zoom. Well, he was in Galway University Hospital yesterday. I got a media invite for it. Couldn't make it, obviously. So he does visit hospitals. He was in Galway yesterday. And they say, you have to understand that it's got to a point where 78 of them wrote a letter, 11 consultants. They believe that he needs to come in and see what they're talking about. But I take your point. What Hamas did last week, the Israelis are doing every day. It's just not in the media. Yeah, indeed. And that's been covered here. But an eye for an eye. You know how that saying goes. I mean, at the end of the day, there has to be some resolution to it, doesn't there? Never has there been more of a gap between politicians and the public than on mass immigration. Journalism that does not point out the elephant in the room here, namely that politicians are acting against the expressed will of their citizens. Well, you see, let's see how that works in a general election, though. There is no political party. There are small groupings down south. There's no political party that is promising to bring an end to mass immigration. We have local elections next year, maybe the general election, and maybe a general election or maybe early 2025. Let's see what happens at the ballot box then. Because I understand that you can blame journalists and what have you, but the people elect the politicians, and obviously we're there to ask questions and find out what their plans are and where they're going to go with it. But ultimately, it's the public too that give the politicians the mandate to make their decisions. I'm a single mother of three young children living in a two-bedroomed mobile home. When I tried to get a house to rent long-term, I was told there was nothing in my area or else the rent was an absolute joke, 15, 16, 1700 euro a month. But now all these men are coming in and plenty of houses are available because the landlords are getting money for them and not one of them paying rent, that being the asylum seekers. Pure greed, and it's people like myself and my children are left to suffer. And that was referenced by one of our guests on the Friday panel as well, that's what people are feeling out there. Election campaigns for the presidency of the Irish Farmers Association are underway. The four-year role is considered the most influential position in Irish farming politics. Two candidates are vying for the position. Francie Gorman, a suckler beef and sheep farmer from Ballinakil, County Laois, and the current South Leinster Regional Chair. He's up against Martin Stapleton, a dairy farmer from County Limerick and the current IFA National Treasurer. Well, Francie Gorman is in Donegal today, canvassing, I presume, Francie. He joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Good to meet you.
Good to have you. You're looking for this role in what is a critical time for farming. It always is, but it seems ever more so now.
It always is, I suppose, and maybe sometimes we overstate that a little bit. There's always issues at farm level to be dealt with, and I suppose when you're in the middle of a jobless field, the current ones are the most important. It surely are, I suppose, to be true.
What are your priorities? What are you telling farmers that you'll deliver for them?
Well, I think the reason I got involved in IFA initially was I could see a great value in the association from the day I joined, and I came up along the ranks slowly but surely. And I can see over the course of the last 10 to 15 years that we've become too passive in how we represent farmers in terms of formulating policy, in terms of driving ahead to get that policy implemented. And I want to see an association that puts the voluntary offers full and central back into how we formulate policy on behalf of farmers. Because at the end of the day, it's very, very hard to beat farmers who are wearing that jersey and you know, who have the implications of that policy on their farm every day to deal with. It's hard to beat having them full and central in driving it. We need to be more proactive in how we go about doing that. We need to be getting ideas into the department, into the European Union. And if you take the next couple of years in particular, current CAP is decided now for the next 5 years, but meetings are already taking place about the next CAP. And there's going to be a window of opportunity there for the next 2 years to try and influence that in a big way. We go beyond
can
that.
Can we influence that, though, Francie? Because we saw really with the recent issue as it relates to nitrates that, you know, you can huff and you can puff. And Charlie McConnell would argue he can make all the arguments on your behalf and so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, the EU did make a decision, and from statements we received from the agriculture minister at the time, they're fait accompli. Once those decisions are made, that's it. We're rule takers, not rule makers.
That's precisely the point I'm making. Mm. If we were in there earlier and prepared to go in with our ideas, we'd have a greater impact on it. When those ideas are drafted at councillor, European level or department level, go to draft legislation, the our ability to be able to impact them at that stage are minuscule. Mm-hmm. You're tinkering around the edges. And if you go back to the Nitrates Directive, the department announced in 2022, based on certain water quality reports and conditions that the EPA put in place, that we would lose our derogation if our water quality didn't measure up in certain ways. We didn't realise they'd made that decision until a month later it was announced. And that's not good enough as a farm lobby organisation. We need to be in there and we need to make sure that the good story...
Who would inform you of that decision being made? Does that come from Europe? Does it come from the Department of Agriculture?
It was an agreement that our department did with the European Commission.
But does that not talk to a lack of respect or communication with the IFA then, that you're only informed of that nationally so long after the fact?
It does. And that's the point I'm making.
Why does no one call it out then?
I'm calling it out now.
Right. Okay, Francie, I get you.
Yeah.
You say that you know, you put together your policies, you cost them, you're ambitious in how you go about representing farmers. You don't sell farmers short. Do you believe more recently compared to perhaps in the past that farmers are being sold short?
I do. And going back to the nitrates one, we have I think it's the fourth best groundwater quality in Europe. You measure it by milligrams of nitrates per litre of water. And for good quality drinking water, that's about 50 milligrams of nitrates per litre of water. There's only 2.5% of our groundwater doesn't meet that standard. That equivalent standard in Europe is nearer to 20%. So while we have to always aim to improve and have better groundwater quality, we have a good story to tell in terms of farming, and we're not getting that out. Mm. And in terms of biodiversity, we have a good story to tell, and that hasn't been gotten out. I travelled on a train from Brussels to France, Paris last year, and I can tell you there's more biodiversity in any parish in Donegal than there was in that whole journey from Brussels to Paris. And we need to be getting that story out there. Mm. And the point I'm making is that we should have been in there, and we should have been aware of what the department were doing in terms of our nitrates action plan, and we weren't. Now, would we have been able to change it? Maybe we wouldn't, but at least if you're in there, you have a chance. When you're not in there, you have no say, and that's the point I make.
I notice also, too, from a quote from you, you say, we have to do whatever you have to do to get delivery. Has the IFA lost its teeth in leading the farming community?
Yes, to a degree. Certainly we're not as strong as we were years ago, and that doesn't mean that you have to go protesting. You've got to be prepared to proactively have policies in place. You cost them, and by costing them, you're able to, number one, you're able to show the delivery both economically and socially for rural communities when you get those policies in place. And let them be, and be ambitious about how we go costing them. Don't sell ourselves short. There was money in this country for everything, for COVID, for banks, you name it. And yet if we wanted €500 million a year for an environmental scheme to deliver environmental ambition at farm level and reward farmers for the work they're doing at farm level around environment, the government would scoff at it.
Right, it feels that we're heading to a situation, and I'm not a farmer, but I know a lot of farmers, I speak to a lot of people in the community, that we're heading to a situation where we have a small group of farmers with running a much smaller dairy herd. We're importing milk, we're importing meat from wherever we might be, and every field has either a solar panel or a tree on it. That seems, a lot of people that speak to me, the direction of traffic that we've almost actually signed up to that already, if you know what I mean. And all of these little battles that are fought about various little issues under the guise of the climate, they're already lost, really.
Well, certainly in terms of food production, we've probably lost I won't say we've lost the battle, but we've lost ground in terms of trying to keep the message out there of how important we are as a food producing nation. Like, we produce food for 40 million people in this country, so we'll never be importing beef or milk or lamb for our own use in this country. It may come in and go back out, small percentages of it do. We are a free, we operate on a free trade basis, with particularly with the European Union and the trade deals they have done around the world. But we have to keep producing food in this country, because we produce it in a more sustainable manner than most places in the world. We don't produce energy. We don't have a heavy engineering industry like they have in Germany, or the aircraft industry in France. So our emissions are always going to look high, because that's what we do.
Well, and you mentioned Germany there. Let's not forget, Germany has a little derogation as well. You know, we're often singled out as if we're special cases, but many countries have derogations in areas of industry that suits them. Francie, listen, we wish you every success, as we do all the candidates in the battle. Just briefly, what's your agenda in terms of what you're doing in Donegal?
Yeah, well, we're in South Donegal today, and in Ballintra and Ballyshannon, and we're heading to Ardara and Dunkeley after that, and up to the Rosses, and we're going up to North Donegal then tomorrow. So, like, looking forward, going to Milford Mart, Cairn Donagh, looking forward to it, really. I've been up about 6 or 8 weeks ago, and I've good support from farmers across the spectrum in Donegal, and I just want to be in a position to be able to meet them and let them let them have a chance to meet me and measure me up and see.
Right, Francie, as I say, best of luck to you and also to Martin. Thank you very much indeed, Francie Gorman there.